Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, brought to you by Netroots Radio, the political podcast, blah, 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 millennials, blah, blah, blah. You know the drill already. Unless you're a new listener, in which case you're like, God, that guy's an asshole. So either way, welcome.
Hi.
I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
It's Saturday, November 4th, 2017, and we're a little salty because yeah. we're being rat-fucked by our own people this week, which...
That seems to be a common theme.
Yeah, right? We're going to talk about that as little as we have to. I hate dignifying it with any air, but it's like our people are kind of asking and wondering what the hell's going on, so we have a duty to explain it. So we will try, and then we will, and they'll be like, why the hell is that happening? That doesn't make any sense. And we'll say, you're right.
Yep.
But do you want to get right into that then, since I already started bitching about it for a minute?
Let's just go ahead.
Oh, God.
Tell us the fuck is going on. Oh, why are we, God. We have Donald Trump as the president.
Oh, he is.
Yeah.
I hadn't noticed. Yeah. I just thought that we were in a parody of real life. Mm-hmm.
No, he's the president, and that's terrible.
And that's one way of putting it.
And so the opposition to him being the president is literally the Democratic Party, and pretty much everybody
it should
else.
Be. It should be a united front against this.
Instead, what are we doing, Trev?
We are relitigating the primaries and trying to sell books and helping the Republicans on their mission to don't look at all this horrible scandal and horrible shit we're going to try to do. Look at how horrible Hillary Clinton is.
We are super good at helping the Republicans win. I mean, if nothing else as a party, we're really good at that. We're really good at giving them ammo publicly to help them. Like that,
in that's so
like,
many ways.
Got to be like
it's becoming more clear and more
thing
clear
on the Democratic Party platform is like how to help Republicans win.
And the more we're involved in politics, and you especially, because you really are like on a daily basis involved in politics, mostly local Colorado and Denver stuff, but in the whole as well.
Yes.
And you see it more than anything. Like this other, we always talk about, it's been this talking point, the Republican Civil War and Bannon versus establishment. It's like when it comes down to voting and getting, I mean, maybe not in the Congress right now with all their horrible health care and tax plan stuff, but when it comes to like winning elections and getting shit on ballots, like they get their act together and they bring all the disparate elements of conservatism and Republicanism together.
Yes.
And we can't do that. We can't even get talking points together.
No, we don't even have a message.
No.
Other than, oh, did you guys know that we're fighting? It's like...
For
if you
what
have,
exactly
it's
and
like,
how?
It's like if you have a five-year-old, right? And the five-year-old wants something. And one parent wants something and one parent wants something else. Or you're supposed to like present a united front, right? Like the parents are supposed to be on the same team. And instead, the parents just... launch into an argument in front of the five-year-old who wanted candy, and the five-year-old just goes and eats candy while the parents are fighting. That's what the Democratic Party is doing. We are not a united front. We're just giving ammunition to the five-year-old to do whatever the fuck they want and publicly airing our shit.
And, and this week, it was very self-serving. And Donna Brazile's not stopping. Now she's saying this other ridiculous crap that just came out. Like she, after the fainting spell, she was going to replace Hillary Clinton with Joe Biden, which is not a thing she
All
could
right,
do.
All right, let's just back up and talk about what we're talking about.
Oh, God.
Maybe if they don't know what we're talking about. So tell me what we're doing.
Donna Brazile, and you may know her. She's been in work in DNC Democratic circles for a million years.
In the media. She was like a CNN thing for a while.
She was
and
a
MSNBC
big part of Hillary Clinton's campaign in 2008.
Yep.
More in an unofficial capacity and more with the party this past election. You know, she's been all over. If you've ever watched cable political news, you've seen Donna Brazile.
Sure.
Apparently something happened either personally or between her or the Clinton campaign, which really soured her, or she sees an opportunity to sell a bunch of stupid books because she has released an excerpt from an upcoming book about how, quote, Hillary rigged the primary.
Yes.
And her rationale for stating this is some very arcane stuff that has to do with financial agreements with fundraising donations.
Yes.
And to make a really, really, really long story as short and succinct as I possibly can, essentially it's this. The DNC offered both the Clinton and the Sanders campaigns basically this deal in terms of routing some money or excess money they have raised back to the DNC to fund down ballot races.
And Which means to fund Democratic races
in
state politics and in federal politics, but it's like senators and congresspeople and state senators and state reps, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Let's help Democrats win, right?
Yeah.
Because it's the Democratic Party.
And in exchange for doing that, the DNC offered a measure of a little bit of control or influence in terms of certain personnel. Now, that doesn't mean control of primaries or caucuses, because that's at the state level. That's what a lot of people either don't understand or pretend to not understand.
Right. 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 So but this is the big bombshell, right? Donna Brazile's like, Clinton had the campaign in her bag and she controlled the DNC. And
well, hold on. Let me get to why she's supposedly coming up with this. The root of it basically is that this extra agreement, because they signed the same sort of overall financial fundraising agreement, but then there was this sort of what they're calling a side agreement, which really isn't a side agreement. It's another aspect to it that was offered to both camps.
Right.
Hillary's camp signed off on it. Bernie's camp refused. And the reason he refused, to me, is very simple. It's because he didn't think he was going to win the nomination, and any excess funds he wanted to go into his PAC or whatever he was going to do after the election.
Right. And Hillary Clinton's a Democrat and was vested in having Democratic candidates on the down ballot win.
Yes.
And so she said, yes, I'd love to do that. That sounds great.
Right.
And in exchange for all this money that I'm going to raise for down ballot candidates, I should have some say in how the party is run.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like how the actual campaigns are run.
That's party politics.
I mean, that's so just there's been some crazy misnomers in the media, and I just want to clear a couple of things up.
Mm-hmm.
The Democratic National Committee and the Democratic Party is actually not a government agency, right?
No.
It's not funded by taxpayers. It's not funded by the government. It's not controlled by the government. It's basically like the VFW or the like weird club that your grandpa was in when he wore weird hats.
Yeah, exactly. It's a club.
It's a private
organization.
It's like, you know, if I decided to open Ladies Who Lunch and I was able to get members and, you know, whatever, right? It's a private organization, so there's no government influence. The reason that's confusing is because these parties, these private organizations, the Republican Party is one as well, elect candidates to public office. And so people think that that must mean that this is a government entity, but it is not.
No.
Right?
Nor does the DNC have any control over...
No, but let me just... Hold on. So... Yeah. The reason this gets confusing is because we really have a two-party system and we have the Republicans and the Democrats, and it seems like that should be a government entity. But if we back up for a second, we have to remember that anyone can run for office, for any office, with very, very few restrictions, right? Mm-hmm. Any citizen can run for office. Back in the day, a bunch of people who had the same values and ideals started a little club and said, we want these people who have these same values and ideals that we do to run for office, and we're going to help them win because they have our same values and ideals. This is not, they didn't form like another section of government or anything. They just said, we have these same values and we're going to have a little club and we're going to raise money to help these people win public office because that will help our values and ideals go forward. Right?
Exactly.
That's what political parties are. Anyone can have a political party. Anyone can run for office. So just remember that, because I think that gets lost in all of this. Like when even I don't think the president really understands that when he's like, we should indict Hillary for other reasons. But he was
whether
also
he understands
about,
it or not, he gets mileage out of it.
Right. But exactly. Because people don't really get that, like, you know, this is not a government entity.
Right.
So, no, we can't prosecute her for...
Well, he wants to prosecute her for everything.
Right, but for signing a deal with a private party to do a thing to help her win, that's not illegal.
No. It's not even immoral.
No, it isn't.
It's really literally how elections are won.
Yes.
So the part of this that really kills me is that... So Donna Brazile said this, and the media sort of jumped on it, and then for some reason... Elizabeth Warren, of all people, got up on TV and said, yeah, well, it sounds like Hillary rigged the primary. And Keith Ellison said something similar. And some other like leaders of the party are getting on this bullshit train, and I guess what they're trying to do is send an olive branch to the Bernie people. Just throw, they know Hillary's not going to run and Bernie might. And even if Bernie doesn't, he's going to have a tremendous influence, or can, in 2018 and 2020. So I think what they've decided is we better throw our lot in with these people if we want to win.
Yes. And it's super frustrating, right? Because I get it, right? People are angry and the left seems pretty motivated right now. So, and this is something that they might care about. So we should talk about it. But it is a little shocking to me that Elizabeth Warren in particular came out for this. Like, she's a Democrat, right? And it's very frustrating to me that our party in this age of what seems like a million dollar ticket, like the golden ticket, right? Can't seem to get it together.
Well, it also supposes
what needs to be attacked instead of attacking each other.
Right. It also supposes that, well, these Bernie dead enders and Stein people, they're kind of intractable. Yeah, we might piss off some of the Hillary supporters, like the way more people that voted for Hillary in the primary. Mm-hmm. But they're reasonable and they'll fall into line. And she's probably right, yep. But
yep.
You know, this is
what we've been
shitty
doing
and divisive.
To, well, this is right.
But here's the bigger point, which is like, had they just shut up about it or shook their head and say, why are we really relitigating this? I don't want to talk about it. I want to talk about this administration and what's going on. Then the Brazil story would have probably shriveled up after a day or two with all the Russia allegations and terrorism and everything else going on. Instead, they breathed life into it. It's the Trump and the Republicans are in the midst of the devastating shit that's coming down with the Russia investigation and Mueller and everything else, have basically said, Republicans and Trump, look over here, Hillary, look at all the Hillary things. And all of a sudden this thing comes up and you have Elizabeth Warren and Keith Ellison going, yeah, look at that.
Right.
What the fuck?
Right. And from a purely like cynical place of what politics are, it makes sense. Elizabeth Warren and Keith Ellison are both darlings of the very, very far left Bernie people. And come out and say, yeah, isn't it awful? And I agree. Then maybe they don't get as much fundraising next round. This is from the Senate. I know, but it's how fucking politics works. And it's gross and it's awful.
Then you know what? If that's what they've decided, we will never get past the 2016 primary, and we'll be fighting each other in 2018, and we'll be fighting each other in 2020.
And we'll lose.
And we'll lose.
Every time.
Again and again and again.
Again and again. Because what the Democratic Party, I know we keep coming back to this messaging thing, but I'm not kidding around. If we can't get on board with what's actually happening with the administration that has power and the Congress that has power, and we have none, and we can't say, hey, they want to fuck you on taxes. They want to make it so that student loans are harder to pay. They want to make it so that adoption no longer has a tax benefit. They want to make it so that all of these horrible things, not to mention, hey, three people got indicted this week on Russian collusion. One of them pled guilty and probably was wearing a wire for the last few months. You know what? Well, let's talk about that. No, I'm sorry. Democrats want to talk about Hillary fucking Clinton and Donna Brazile and the 2016 primary. Can we get past the fucking primary already and talk about how the Russians influenced the actual election that made this garbage person president? I feel like the Democrats are living in this fantasy world where, like, none of that actually happened. We're not acknowledging that Trump is the president. We're not going to do that. We're just going to talk about what we did wrong to elect Hillary Clinton, because clearly that's where things went off the rail. And it's like, I just want to punch and smack the shit out of these people and be like, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it. You're just playing into the hands of Republicans. Sometimes I wonder if they're just like, are they paying you to say this shit? Because I swear to God, if we as a party cannot talk about what is in front of our faces that is against everything that we believe, and it is just fodder for the cannon, we still are talking about the primary of our own party in 2016. We are so fucked. We're so fucked.
Yeah, and you had in 2012, you had a few extreme crazy right wingers go that way about Romney, and it should have been Santorum or whatever, but that it didn't get much airspace.
Nobody
because
cared.
It was stupid.
Yes, it was stupid. And most Republicans didn't sign on. They didn't play ball.
Yeah.
They didn't take the bait. They said, they came out on every Sunday news show and said, yes, Romney's our guy. Romney's great. Here's why he's great. Here's what he did. He was a governor. Da, 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 da. And he won the primary, and then he lost, and then they went, oh, well, we'll just.
And there was a little intrigue
Obama.
There. There was the Ron Paul people, and there was some weird shit with Santorum.
But it wasn't
and,
a year later.
No.
A year into Obama's second term, nobody was talking about Mitt Romney.
No. Nobody.
Or, like, Democrats were not blaming Obama's failings on, or sort of trying to say, I don't like Obama, so.
Right, the economy is in
Mitt
a terrible
Romney
place, and we got killed in the midterms. This is
right,
Mitt
but at
Romney's
least
fault.
It's Mitt Romney. At least we're not Mitt Romney. At least Mitt Romney didn't. We didn't do that. We just said, yeah, well, we're doing the best we can, and here's what we have. Like, we're just.
It's so again, it's messaging. We are completely inept at it.
Yes.
Beyond
and,
inept.
And we're. It's not like. It's unity too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, unity and messaging, which is kind of the same thing, but we're, and just, I don't know, like a larger, like, get out of your fucking bubble, burst it, and look at what's happening in the world and go, how can we use this to our advantage?
Yeah.
This is a gift that's been given to us. The literal White House administration is melting down. There's been indictments. People are, this is not what anyone wants.
Mm-hmm.
And the polls show that.
Mm-hmm.
But the polls do not show that what they want is Democrats.
We should be in a
and
position of strength.
And that is because we're not addressing anything.
Well, actually, right now they do. The last few polls, it's been so bad for Trump recently that the polls for preference for control of Congress actually looks pretty good. But we can fuck that up in a heartbeat.
But what are we, like, just above 50%? We should be at 85.
No, not even. We're like at 48 and they're like at 41,
we
right?
should be at like 85-90%.
Yeah, no
the Democrats should have control again. That was much better. This is
but that's
horrible.
Besides the point, Rachel.
No, that's the fucking point. If we were to tell people, this is not what we stand for, this is not what we want, here's what we want, and we just said it all at the same time over and over again, everyone would be like, obvs Democrats.
Well, we don't have the discipline. We can't even get the right people in the right room to agree on the talking points.
We can't even get to agree publicly in the media with each other. We want to tear each other apart publicly. Publicly in the media, we're tearing each other apart rather than talking about what's actually fucking happening in Washington.
Now, the Republicans are too, but they never pay a price for that.
Well, they're not, though. I mean, they're in a way worse crisis than we are. We are inventing a crisis.
No, that's a very good way of putting it.
In a crisis.
Absolutely.
We are inventing one and relitigating one. We should be fucking done. We should be moving forward. Like, okay, that happened. Who cares? This is horrible. What's happening to the country is horrible. Let's fix it. Let's point out all the horribleness as it happens. Let's have a unified horribleness message making anything up. Just, oh, this happened this week. It's horrible. Here's why. This happened this week. It's horrible. Here's why. Right? Instead, we're like, yeah, Trump's awful. Anyway, what I'm really mad about is back in the day when we had a primary, somebody did something that, like, for fuck's sake.
We're not even getting off at some points that, oh yeah, Trump is awful, but
we're like not even mentioning the president is awful. We're like, I know, yeah, that's bad. Taxes, but
just the time
really though, Bernie got fucked, and you're like, are we fucking seriously still talking about Bernie Sanders? It's maddening.
I want to close this topic because there's other important shit to talk about.
My blood pressure just rises.
Well, we'll think about this with everything going on, right? We had a terrorist attack earlier this week that killed eight people in New York.
Correct.
We
had another one in Colorado.
The bombshells just on Monday. Again, like something happens on Monday and we feel like it was a month ago.
Monday,
we had the Mueller announcement of
three indictments
of Manafort, Gates, and Papadopoulos.
Inside of Trump's campaign.
Yeah. And we have this horrendous tax plan that the Republicans are trying to shove down our throat. And we as Democrats decide, well, now is a good time to relitigate the primaries again.
Yep.
It's insanity.
It's
insanity.
It's absolute insanity.
And if Donna Brazile thinks this is the right time to try to hawk her stupid book for whatever reason, that's one thing. But then for Elizabeth Warren and Keith Ellison and other people to then give it air, to give it oxygen?
No.
That's just insane.
Like,
and like you said, I sort of get from the most cynical political position where they're coming from, but now's not the time.
No. And why are we firing up the base about 2016 primary when we could be firing up the base about taxes and healthcare Russian collusion and everything that's happening, the LGBT stuff that's happening? Like, there's so many things that Democrats are wildly opposed to that are currently happening. We could be firing up the base in a positive way that says we are, it's not positive, it's just in a way that says we are united against these things. And instead, we're fighting with ourselves. And I'm not, like, we can fight with ourselves. We should do that behind closed doors. We fight the power, we fight the administration, we resist publicly, united. Well, that's what we should be doing.
How about this? Tuesday, there's a critical election in Virginia. You've got Ralph Northam running against a guy who's basically decided to be a Trump clone.
Yes.
And now the Democrats in Washington are trying to rat fuck that?
I guess. I don't know.
It's unbelievable. It's just unacceptable and unbelievable.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth Warren, frankly, has got to walk back this shit and try to do some kind of damage control.
Yeah.
And it's probably too late anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't want to even talk about this anymore. I was reticent to even talk about it because it's so ridiculous that we're having this conversation.
Yes.
But here we are, and we're not going to stop fighting the good fight. We are trying to build a way of getting concise talking points across to the public of what our party stands for.
Yes.
But our party can't agree on that, so.
No.
I don't know.
So we're going to try to surpass the party.
Right. We're in this weird place where the uber progressive wing of the party has decided we shouldn't use identity politics, which doesn't make any sense at all, but that's where we are. Well, because they're sycophants and their leader has declared that should be the case. But in any event, what now? You want to talk about the Mueller indictments?
Yes.
Okay, so we speculated on Friday that Manafort was going to be one of the people.
We were right.
And we were right. Well, I mean, that was pretty easy.
Yeah, so, you know, yeah. Some people were saying other things, but I was like, it's got to be fucking Manafort, right?
Yeah. So,
and it was.
And there have been some interesting wrinkles in that. Manafort apparently had an alias and a fake passport.
He had three passports.
Wow.
Which
gangster, literally.
Well, let's have facts here. I was curious about why anyone would need more than one passport. Turns out there are actual reasons.
Okay.
You don't want to go to Israel having had stamps on your passport from, say, Syria or other places, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. So there's certain countries that you don't want to go to and have had stamps from other countries because they either won't let you in or, like,
they'll
there's things
shit
that can happen. Right. So some people have more than one passport. It seems to me that from what I was reading from this person who seems like they know, most people have two, right? He did a lot of international travel, so he had three. It does seem a little suspicious, for sure.
But I thought one of them was under an alias.
I don't know about that.
Okay.
That I don't have any information about. But
okay.
But I do want to say, like, it seems suspicious, and it probably is, but there is, like, legitimate reasons for having multiple passports, which I didn't know. And why I looked it up, because I was like, why the fuck would you have, are you even allowed to do that? And they're like, yeah, you are, and here's why. And I was
okay,
like, all right,
okay, that's
cool,
fair
cool
enough.
Fair enough. But anyway, no, so we've long speculated that a lot of the stuff that's going to be coming down in indictments is going to be about, we always say mob, right?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of it had to do with money laundering,
yeah.
And it seems that they have proven that they feel confident enough in the evidence that they have gathered to indict him on money laundering for the Russian government.
And Russian gangsters.
Yes. Well, right. That's
because... Well, I mean, it's kind of one and the same. Yeah.
Yeah. And this guy that worked for him, Gates, I forget his first name, who I'd never heard of, which is fine. No one had. He just was like a sort of number two, number three guy, mm-hmm, to Manafort. And then this other guy, Papadopoulos... Is that,
yeah, 29-year-old fresh-faced kid with nothing,
yep,
on his resume who,
yep,
knew somebody and they got him in there. I think it was Sam Clovis, who could be next on the chopping block. Clovis is quite a character. He looks like Boss Nass from The Phantom Menace, and he's a disgusting, horrible garbage person.
Oh, they all are.
Uh-huh.
But this Papadopoulos guy is cracking me up because I worked in campaign politics and
yeah,
I was a field organizer.
I wrote about this, yeah.
And I can tell you that when we, cause the way that the administration has framed this person is to say, oh, he was basically a door knocker.
He's a nobody.
He was a volunteer who knocked on doors and
happened to sit in a high level foreign policy meeting sometimes.
Oh, he maybe did, like, okay, just coming from a campaign perspective. No.
No, that's not. No, that's not how this works.
That's not how any of this works.
The candidate also doesn't mention you by name when you're a door knocking volunteer.
No, they don't even know who you are. Sorry for door knockers. You should totally knock on doors.
But, well, we've been door knockers forever, so.
But the candidate probably doesn't know you, and definitely if they're a presidential candidate, probably doesn't know 99% of the people that knock on doors for them. They don't mention them publicly. Those door knockers do not sit in high-level meetings. They are not considered, quote, policy advisors or campaign advisors. Like, there's this discrepancy, this, like, wide, like, the Trump administration is saying this person was basically a door knocker, and the Mueller investigation is saying, well, here's all the meetings he was in and here's all the things he was doing. And well, those things seem very disparate.
It's kind of irrelevant to me what they say his role was.
Yeah.
Or even what his actual role was. If he was a door knocker who managed to have access to the highest level members of the campaign and the campaign knew that he was coordinating with Russia to influence the election, which it now appears right. He most certainly
yes,
was.
Yes, he pled guilty to such.
And there's speculation he's been wearing a wire for the last 2 months.
Yes, so he...
Talking to, saying mm-hmm. who knows what mm-hmm. to who knows who. Mm-hmm. And
let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so this guy that no one had ever heard of, because that's how it works when you're a really good investigator, you figure out who's who and who's what. And so this guy comes out of nowhere for the rest of us, but Mueller's known about this for a while, at least since July, figures out this guy's been colluding with Russia mm-hmm. on behalf of, or just in an attempt to, let's just give it the widest berth we can, in an attempt to help Trump win.
Right.
And so he comes to him and he says, you did this. And the guy's like, totes. And he's like, okay, well, that's like a federal crime. Basically, you want to wear a wire or you want to go to jail forever.
And he's 20. And remember, you're 29.
Right. So there is widespread speculation that I won't say is necessary. We don't have evidence of it, but it's likely that he's been wearing a wire either since July or since October.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason that the prosecution would want you to wear a wire is if they had knowledge of or belief in the fact that you had access to people in power, like people that were targets, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't ask like a random guy on the street to wear a wire. That would be useless. You only ask that person to wear a wire if you believe that they could bring back actionable intelligence.
Yeah.
Something that would be useful to you. And that would be in exchange for a lesser sentence or some sort of deal, right? And we found out on Monday that he did in fact plead guilty to the charge. The sentencing will happen whenever, but likely the administration will, the prosecution will say like no jail time or whatever in exchange for his cooperation. And in the indictment and in his guilty plea, it said that he was a, I can't remember exactly the term, but basically like a cooperative witness.
Yes.
Which when you hear people on TV talk about that who are prosecutors, they say that's someone who has said like full stop, I'll do whatever you want.
Yeah, and if he changes his story, his immunity goes away.
Correct. Yeah. So likely he's been wearing a wire and likely that wire has picked up on something that was of interest to the Mueller investigation or they wouldn't make him wear it, is all I'm trying to say.
Sure. Yeah, this is just the beginning.
Yes.
And it's very interesting to see the tack that Trump himself and I guess his legal team has made, although I don't think his legal team can corral him if they wanted to.
No.
But what I thought he might do was say, and I'm sure some smart lawyer, if he has any, probably suggested this, was go, wow, okay, I really got hoodwinked by that mm-hmm. Manafort and by that Papadopoulos. And I'm so glad they got caught trying to do these dirty things that I had nothing to do with, and now we can move on, right? But that would be a smart thing to do, right?
Right.
Instead,
but I think they know that's not true.
Well, of course they know it's not true, but it would make sense to try to go that route, right? Because then you can also paint them as liars. Be like, I don't know what they're going to say,
well,
but they'll say whatever they want to save their own skin.
Yeah, it's so interesting that there's been almost no comment about this, right? Like they haven't said. they haven't said these people are liars, and they haven't said, oh, thank God we caught the bad people. They've said, we don't know them.
Yeah.
We don't know anything about this, and they weren't involved, which is like basically saying, fuck, we're fucked.
Well, what they're saying is they had a very minor roles. Who are these people? I don't remember that
ever happened.
Yeah, even about Manafort.
I don't know. Then Jeff Sessions, that whole thing.
Okay, we'll get to that in a second. But okay. But let me go back to finishing my point on these guys. But for the most part, the only defense has been Hillary.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Which has nothing to do with anything.
No.
And
they don't really have one.
Well, so right. It's like when you talk to your dad about what's going on.
Yes, correct.
He says Hillary.
Yes, correct.
Isn't this thing Trump did
my
awful?
My dad could basically be in the White House. He could be Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Right.
Because all he wants to talk about is Hillary. And I'm like, cool, she lost, so what about your guy? And he's like, no, but...
Hey, Dad,
Hillary?
Trump just signed the Rachel's Dad Has to Be a Slave in Siberia Act.
Yeah, but Hillary would have been worse. Hillary would have been way worse. She would have made me work in, I don't know...
North Korea.
Somewhere worse. I don't know, but it would have been worse, I'm telling you. She's awful.
Right.
Yes.
Right. That's kind of where we are. But it is interesting to note that. But and again, we assume that Trump has any rational plan of defending himself or whatever. And now that we breathed a little life into them for at least a few days with the stupid fucking down in Brazil thing.
Yep.
But that eventually, people will get bored of that eventually, I think. And
I don't know. I think that there's like some, the only reason it has legs, I've really been thinking about this, is because there's this like overwhelming sense of like guilt and shame and take backsies that can't happen about people's vote. So they keep wanting to talk about
justified.
Hillary because it sort of somehow makes them feel less bad that they didn't vote for
her. Sure. But back
anyway.
Back to the Mueller investigation. Yeah. So we can only speculate now who's next. I think Jared Kushner is in a world of shit. I think Michael Flynn is going to be indicted at some point.
Definitely. We already know that he's guilty of crimes.
Sam Clovis could very well be indicted. Here's the funny thing that also happened this week. And this was insanity. Sam Clovis, who's the guy that basically hired Papadopoulos and put him in the position he's in, he's a guy who ran for Senate in Iowa, and he ran Rick Perry's campaign, and he's an awful cartoon garbage person.
Okay. I don't know anything about him, so.
Yeah. Well, he was nominated as Secretary of Agriculture.
Oh, that guy. Right.
And his confirmation hearings were going to be this week.
And he said, no.
Well, so that Pat Leahy and some other people were like, oh, we have some questions for you.
Yeah.
Nothing new about agriculture. We know you're not a scientist, so, I mean, why bother asking you anything about that?
Yeah.
But
yes, please come have a hearing with us.
And then at the last second, they're like, oh, maybe not. Because then he's under oath.
Correct.
And now he can perjure himself, or he can present evidence that Mueller would be happy to use.
Either
so
way,
now Sam Clovis isn't the
no, he's not the new no, secretary.
The new non-scientist secretary needs to be a scientist. That would have been really interesting.
Yes. Somebody smart caught that one at the last minute, which is unfortunate.
Well, you know, they didn't catch was their own report about, oh yeah, climate change is like totally real and we're all gonna die from it.
Yeah. Well,
that was released by the Trump administration
yesterday
or 2 days ago.
In a minute. But just to finish up with this. So, all right. So,
our microphone just fell in, literally fell in Rachel's lap.
It did. As so many things do not. anyway. So, you know, who knows where this goes?
Yeah.
But there is wide speculation. There's been reports from inside the White House that Trump is melting down completely.
Which is all the time.
I have a perspective to give because he's super mad at Jared Kushner. Super mad.
Because it was Kushner's suggestions to do all the worst things that are getting him in the most trouble.
He's been quoted as saying Jared Kushner is the worst White House advisor in modern history.
No, Trump didn't say that.
Trump did say that. He didn't say it publicly, but somebody said he said that.
Oh, I didn't think it was Trump who said that. I thought it was just somebody in the inner circle.
He's been talking to Steve Bannon on the phone a lot, and he's been bitching about things, and Steve Bannon has been like, Jared Kushner's a fucking asshole. Like, they've had a battle for
a
long time, as we know.
Probably.
Right?
Yeah.
So Trump's been like, he's the worst. He's the fucking worst. And I was talking to Dana the other night and I was like, fucking pot kettle. Right? So the funny thing about Trump is that he's the most unqualified person to ever hold office, right? He has no qualifications. He has no business being in politics. But he's the president. And he carries that over into his appointments and people he listens to. And I love that he said, we don't need people who know anything, right? We don't need that. I don't need political advisors who know anything about politics. I need my son-in-law. I need this journalist guy. And I need some kid I knew from
this business
grade
partner.
School and this business partner, right? And so he takes political advice from someone who knows absolutely nothing about politics. And it's garbage advice because of course it is, because he doesn't know anything about politics. And then he's like, it's fucked up that it was the worst political advisor ever. And I'm like, you're the worst president ever for the same reason. Like, I'm so, it's some sort of like beautiful irony that like he applied the same principles to his own political advisors as he did to himself. And it turned out really badly. Right.
It's like just unfolding.
If Trump had said, all right, I won. That was crazy. Didn't expect that. I should definitely get the best people in the Republican Party to come help me out because I don't know anything about politics and they know everything and I will listen to them. We would be so much more fucked than we are right now.
Oh, yeah.
Instead, he said, I don't need any of that. He's a narcissist. And he was like, fuck it. I don't need it. I just want to listen to people I know and that I trust. Do they know anything about politics, about policy, about how the political system operates? Doesn't matter. Don't care.
Do they have any interest in governance?
No. Nope.
Well, neither does Trump.
No, but then it went badly. Very, very badly. It's going really badly for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, how did this happen? And you're like, right. I want to say that to every Trump voter.
Yeah.
Who's like, how'd this happen? And you're like, yeah.
You know, at least Ivanka was kind of smart enough to realize like, I don't know what I'm doing here. I'm just not going to say anything anymore and do
like,
anything.
Kushner's in charge of like solving
Middle East peace
and like also some finance
defeating ISIS.
Like he's in charge of everything because fuck it, I like him. He's a good guy. And it didn't go well. And then he's like, how'd this happen? And you're like, well, you appointed someone who knows literally nothing.
Yeah.
Just like yourself. Anyway, it just seems like a bit of fun irony for me.
Bannon didn't know anything either. Bannon's just a message guy.
But that doesn't mean he doesn't know anything. Right.
Well, he doesn't really know anything about how to
govern legislation, but he knows how fucking politics works, and he knows how to make a message, and he knows what works and what doesn't. Like Jared Kushner's a fucking little kid businessman.
Yeah,
he doesn't know shit. He's never been in this world. At least Bannon's been in this world.
Well,
for a while.
Bannon reminds me of the character from Network, Faye Dunaway's character, where they're like, you can't have this tabloid stuff on a major network. And she's like, why not?
Why?
The ratings will be great.
Yeah.
This is what people really want to see for a while.
Right.
And then people are like, Steve Bannon, you can't have open white supremacy representing a major political party. And he's like,
why not?
People will love
that's
it.
That's what they fucking want.
Yeah. And he's,
stop the dog whistle.
He's absolutely right.
He was. Yes.
You know, we'll see how much shelf life that has, but.
I worry that it's too much.
That's where we're at.
Yep.
No doubt about it.
Yeah.
In any event, so. With the Mueller investigation, there were some, and I thought there would be more, and I don't know why they bothered writing this. There were some right-wing talking heads who said, oh, well, this is it. Well, this is nothing. As if this is the end of it.
This is the end.
Right.
Mueller's like, investigation closed. We got these three low-level guys. We're done. No, this is the very beginning.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. This is the appetizer.
Yes. This is, we have so much, like they were really bad at doing this. So we have so much overwhelming evidence that it's possible to charge them right now.
And it's going to take a while to sort it all out and get the charges rock solid and build a mountain of evidence. Because that's another thing they tried to do for a while too, Trump especially, and the, you know, people on Twitter and some right-wing talking heads. Well, this investigation has been going on a year and we've heard nothing. So that means they haven't found anything.
Which is hilarious if you know anything about investigations.
Like, well, that I think is more for their base to keep them calm and keep them in line, so they don't jump ship and panic. But yeah, it's like they think people are so stupid.
When Mueller started this investigation, it's
gonna take a minute.
Thanksgiving to toward the end of the year that
we hear the first thing,
and this is
it's right on schedule.
Well, it's even a couple weeks early.
Yeah.
Right? Thanksgiving's not for two more weeks or three.
Oh, I thought we might not even get indictments till January.
Me too, but. February. This was so rock solid. They were like, well, at least these three. fuck it, we're good on them.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean they're like, all right, cool, we're done. No, there's just more and more, and you know,
and follow the money again.
Yes, as we have said, it's all about money laundering and the mob and
that's, well, that's the whole mob, that's the whole point of the Trump campaign.
Correct.
This is an exercise of building the Trump brand and enriching himself and his family and his Russian handlers and buddies.
Correct.
It's a big sort of Ponzi scheme. Maybe Ponzi is not the right word, but yeah, this is a big grift scheme.
It's a giant grift.
Manafort has been in on it. Flynn is in on it. Kushner is at the very center of it.
And when you go talk to your uncle who loves Trump still.
Yeah, who always will.
And they're going to make this defense of, well, these people didn't really matter or they didn't know. it's one or the other, right? So the argument that I would make, that I will be making to my dad next weekend is, okay, they either knew, right? Because they did vetting properly and they knew and they didn't care.
Yeah.
Or they didn't know. So they're stupid. So they're either stupid or they're complicit.
Well, we knew Sessions.
One of the two.
And after the break, we'll get into Sessions.
But hold on, right? One of the two. They either knew that Paul Manafort was a dirty, dirty, Russian-tied, money-laundering, mobster businessman, and they hired him anyway, which makes them complicit. Or they just didn't bother checking into his background, and then why did you hire him in the first place exactly?
Right, and how did this Papadopoulos volunteer nobody guy get to sit in with you on high-level meetings
CC
everybody and get the green light to talk to the Russians?
Yeah, so it's not, you can't have both. It can't be they didn't know and it doesn't matter. Like, it can't be they didn't know they were bad and they were low-level.
Well, that's been...
It can't be both. It has to be either they didn't know, which means they didn't do any vetting of people who were running the campaign, which seems like wildly irresponsible, or they fucking definitely knew and that's why they gave them a job.
Well,
right?
Well, and that's very likely the case. But
right.
Here is my argument has been, okay, if we're going to have the argument over, you know, how influential were they in the campaign actually? Well, I think that's exactly what they want, because now it's an argument and it's a he said, he said. But you humor them, then they're completely boxed in.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, so why didn't you vet this guy?
Oh, we did.
Well, okay. So you vetted him and then you knew about all his mob ties and...
Oh, no, we didn't. We didn't vet him, I guess. We didn't know.
Okay, so then why should we trust any of your personnel decisions or anything that's happened in your administration is on the up and up?
We're for extreme vetting, but not for
our
people
own,
who work for... Yeah. I knew him back from... I didn't think... it falls apart. It completely falls apart entirely.
And then with the Papadopoulos thing, it's kind of the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. So how did this low-level, nobody, nothing, door-knocker guy have access to the very highest level foreign policy meetings? How was he allowed or given the green light, as correspondent seems to show, to talk to these people in Russia?
Right.
How did you allow this to happen?
I mean, it's not like he was like just serving coffee for a meeting and happened
to be
there.
Which is exactly
what
they said.
Yeah.
He's a coffee fetcher.
Like, maybe, you know, he's blowing somebody, so they were like, you can come to the next meeting too. And by the way,
jeez,
I really like it. Do you want to go to Russia and talk to the Kremlin and help our campaign? I mean, I don't know what...
No, that was his... That's probably why he was brought in. He had these Russian ties.
He was just like, you know what? I'm going to serve you coffee, and then you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to Russia.
Well, he was... here's the thing, right?
Why did Russia meet with him? That's the other question.
Well, here's Papadopoulos' story.
As an American citizen, I can just go, hey, you know what? I really hate Hillary Clinton, so I'm going to travel to Russia, and I'm just going to make a phone call and be like, yo, Putin, it's Rachel. Let's talk. I fucking hate Hillary.
Well, let me explain.
And he's going to be like, yeah, let's talk, Rach. No, that's not how it
works.
Let
me explain his background, right?
Yeah.
Papadopoulos was... His resume is nothing. It's not even mine. As far as politics goes, he knew this professor based out of England who had a lot of ties to the Russian government. And it seems very likely that's how he got in the position he was in.
Why
Sam
else
Clovis.
Would he? Why
right.
Would
his,
you hire this
His
guy?
Sparkling resume?
Right. I mean, it's the same conversation, whether it's he didn't do anything, he didn't know anybody, but he was somehow magically able to get into the Russian government to help, or he didn't know anything or know anybody, but magically was able to get into the Trump campaign. Like, it's not like I can just go make a phone call and be like, yo, Trump, I'm just a huge fan. Let me sit on a national security meetings.
Yeah.
Right? Like, none of this makes any sense from their perspective. It just, it does, it falls apart at the slightest bit of scrutiny.
Great. So if Mueller comes out tomorrow and says, okay, well, we indicted him because he lied to us, but you know what he got? We got nothing on tape. They actually didn't know who he was, and they didn't. They said no to the Russia thing, and you know, it's right. Like, yeah, right. That's not how the real life works.
That's not how it happened, obviously. But let's say, okay, good.
Yeah, let's pretend good. For the moment. You know, if you're a Trump defender, that's what's going on here.
You
good
really
luck.
Think that's what's going to happen?
Yeah, good luck with
he
that.
He pled guilty, but really, it was nothing. You just No. No, come on.
Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk about Sessions.
Yeah.
And how he could be in some hot water, but how it might actually serve for the time being better if he was actually stayed around for a hot minute, as terrible as he is as an AG.
And he is the worst.
So don't go anywhere. We will talk about that when we're back. Welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. We were talking about all things related to the Mueller investigation and the newest indictments and what might come next and what the hell is happening and everything we can possibly speculate on.
Which we tried not to do too much of.
Well, we do a little bit. It's our job, right?
I mean, no.
Not a job. We don't get paid for
no,
it.
No, we don't. No.
But anyway, Sessions.
Yeah.
Jeff Sessions is in some trouble, and
he sure is. Again.
He's in some trouble mostly thanks to the dogged questioning of Al Franken.
Yes.
Speaking of people that have never been in politics and suddenly thrown into politics, sometimes it works out because Al Franken has been a terrific senator.
Yes, he has.
From the great state of Minnesota.
Yes, he has.
Makes you wonder, and he's very popular now, makes you wonder why his initial election was so close. I guess probably because a lot of people had the same concerns that we just mentioned. He's not a politician. But in any event, he pinned down Sessions really hard and said, okay, so and he asked it like in 100 different ways until Sessions got angry about it.
Yes.
You have no knowledge.
And he got criticism for it too. But he, yeah.
Who fucking cares?
Yeah.
So you are being unequivocally clear that you do not know of any contact with the Russians by the Trump campaign. You are saying that. And he asked it like 10 different ways to make sure.
So we're being super clear on this.
He set a perjury trap.
Yeah, he did.
And Sessions walked right into it.
He did. Now, it will be the third time that Sessions will come back to Congress to clarify his original statements.
Okay, so that is happening? Because I hadn't heard that was set up yet.
I don't know when it will happen, but yeah, they've called for him to come back.
Oh, boy.
Because you can't lie to Congress. You can't lie to, you can't go under oath and lie. That's illegal. I know it might seem petty given everything that's illegal these days that seems to be getting away with, but that's one of those sticking points that Congress just really isn't okay with. You can't
even
come here and
this
say
Congress,
something.
Congress, I think, would be hard to.
Yeah, you can't come here and under oath say this thing is absolutely unequivocally didn't happen, and then it happens and you go, well, that's not what I meant, this thing. And then, additionally, I have to come back again and say, yeah, when I said that the first time I was lying, and then the second time I'm just clarifying, and I just,
And Sessions,
it's really bad.
Sessions is a lawyer, and he's a smart lawyer.
Yes, he is, yes.
So he will do his best to wriggle out of this with semantics.
I was watching his testimony. They were playing some of the the things that they think might get him in trouble. On MSNBC on my lunch break at work, I was watching it, and it's funny because we all know exactly what he meant, but when you actually parse together the words that he said, he made a very impassioned plea about how he was a public servant and
he would never.
He would. It's preposterous to even imply that he would have ever
how
done something.
How dare you besmirch my good name?
But he didn't actually say the words that we know what he meant.
Yeah, he's
careful. He didn't actually say those words because he's a fucking lawyer, and I work with lawyers. And let me tell you, what he said was carefully thought out, parsed through, talked about, written down, edited, memoed over and over and over again to get where we got, which is what he actually said. And when you actually go back and look at what he said, it's going to be hard to have any kind of perjury, because what he really said was, of course I didn't know anything bad happened. Of course I didn't know this. And then mostly he just talked about his unimpeachable character and his service to the Senate and his service to the government. And, you know,
well, even if it's not going to get him on the hook for impeachment, he'll have to admit, yes, I did know that a lot of people involved in the Trump campaign were talking to,
like,
the Russians.
When I said I didn't personally have any knowledge of collusion with Russia, that is not provable at this point that that's not true. However, he now magically remembers turning down a meeting that was proposed with Russians and this Papadopoulos kid, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, yeah, no, I said that couldn't happen. And you're like, wait, didn't you say you didn't have any knowledge of any questions about this?
Right.
And he's like, well, that's not exactly what I said.
So it's a double-edged sword for him.
Yeah.
Because he did the right thing in terms of protecting himself and Trump when this Papadopoulos kid was like, hey, let's work with the Russians to have an advantage in the election. And Sessions was smart enough to know, we can't do that.
No, you can't actually do that.
Yeah.
But then now that's perjury because he said, I have never and nor have I ever had any dealings with any members of Russian anything having to do with the Trump campaign. I didn't do any of these things. And then you're like, well, I did shut that kid down when he said the thing.
And not just Papadopoulos. There are so many tentacles with the Trump campaign that were so connected to Russia.
Oh, my God.
Sessions had no choice but to say, no, there's nothing to see here and hope it never saw the light of day.
But then it did.
Then now it has.
And now it has. And now he's like, I mean, I did tell this kid that he couldn't, like, collude with the Russians. But also I had no knowing of anyone trying to do that. I said it, you can't do it, but I also didn't know anyone was trying.
Except for the person
I told he couldn't do it.
Yeah.
But I told him not to.
That's going to be a tough spin.
Yeah, it's a really, really tough spin.
And at this point, A. Sessions might just plead the fifth. I mean, pleading the fifth looks really bad, but I don't know what the hell he's going to do.
Well, you can't because it's perjury. So you either told the truth or you didn't under oath. And yeah, you can spin it in a bunch of ways.
He's going to try to spin
it. Yes. And he's a very,
and he's a lawyer.
They're very smart. He's a very smart man.
Oh, yes.
He's a very
evil,
vile, evil, devilish, horrifying garbage person. But
yep,
he's a really, really smart guy. Not like Trump. He's a lawyer.
Right.
Like, he went to law school and lawyers are really smart.
Yeah. So most of them.
Yeah. I mean, some of them are awful, but or not smart, but no, but he's really smart. Like, I wish that he wasn't so smart because he's literally like the face of evil, but he is really smart. So I think he'll find a way to probably weasel his way out of this.
At least weasel his way out of a perjury charge
makes
for him.
A lot of sense why he recused himself from the Russia investigation.
Given what
we actually know and are starting to find out and are starting to realize the extent to which he knew that things were going on.
Right. His recusal
wasn't just about Comey.
No.
It wasn't any of that. It was about, I can't be involved in this because this could have serious legal ramifications if I were to do anything having to do with this, because I know what I did and I know what I knew and I can't have any involvement because it's gonna fucking come out. Like, he knew back then when he recused himself that some of this shit was gonna come out, and he couldn't, and if he were leading the investigation or in any way involved, he was smart enough to
know.
Then
he's in Mueller's office right next to Papadopoulos.
Exactly. He knew way back then that that can't be a thing. So Trump was mad because he thought it had to do with Comey, but Jeff Sessions was like, look, like shit's going to unravel and I'm not going to be the head of it. I'm not doing it. Yeah. I'm not.
Because then I'm on the chopping block.
You can hate me forever, but I'm not fucking putting myself in that position. I'm not going to do
Which Trump did for a while and got angry and was called him out on Twitter because he's an idiot.
Yeah.
But in any event.
Yeah, so he's going to go back to Congress and try to massage the second version of non-perjury again for the third time. And let's just a reminder, he is the head of the Department of Justice, which is an interesting place for that person to be.
Let's talk about, so a lot of people are like, oh, goody, I hate Jeff Sessions. Now he might get run out of his AG spot. Now explain why that might not actually be the optimal thing in this situation as far as the Trump-Russia investigation goes.
So Trump's been talking to a bunch of people because he's unhinged, right? He's very upset about all of this.
Yes.
And there's been a lot of options put on the table in terms of what he can do to stymie the investigation. Firing is one that's pretty much off the table, but urge Congress to defund himself, start a new investigation into Hillary. Like, there's a bunch of stuff.
Right.
Jeff Sessions, while he is doing real and lasting damage to particularly LGBT people and
people of color's voting
people
rights.
People of color, immigrants seeking abortions, all kinds of things. In terms of the Trump-Russia investigation, it's probably best that he stays the AG only because I don't really know. So let's say he resigns or gets fired.
Rosenstein's next in line and he's not recused.
Right. And Trump's not going to appoint him. I mean, Rosenstein appointed Mueller. So he's going to pick somebody else. And I don't know about you, but I wonder who that person could possibly be. And,
Rudy Giuliani.
And how much of a yes man that person is and just how much they want to fall on the sword for Trump to not get impeached. So, you know, you fire Jeff Sessions and that's a win for everybody. But then you appoint somebody who, you know, is willing to fire Mueller and shake things up and do all this crazy shit. And it sort of insulates Trump from having to do it himself because he can't technically. Rosenstein's not going to do it. And Jeff Sessions being recused means that Mueller's investigation kind of has to happen. If the attorney general of the country is recused from something, then they sort of can't do anything. If he were to appoint someone else, they might say, well, he had nothing to do with Russia, and so now he can take over the investigation and he can do all these things. And so, it's tough. Mm-hmm. As much as I hate this little racist asshole, I think for the country's best chance to find out the truth about all of this, it's probably best if the attorney general is Jeff Sessions and is recused from the investigation and Mueller just continues to get to do what he's doing. Right?
Right.
So that's, of course I want him to go like die in a lake of fire, but I think for right now he's probably best where he is, which is kind of cut off at the knees and has nothing to do with the Russia Trump thing. Now he's doing a lot of other awful things, which
sure
we should talk about probably, but in terms of the Russia stuff, probably best if Sessions is right where he is.
Yeah, for the time being.
Yeah.
As counterintuitive as that seems.
You would never hear me say that sentence if we lived in the right world. No, not in the upside down. But for the time being, Jeff Sessions should be the attorney general, I guess.
So what now? Do we want to talk about Kevin Spacey? I don't know if we brought him up.
I do. I want to talk about, I know we talk a lot about, we got a little criticism about the last podcast just being so heavy on the...
Did we?
Sexual harassment stuff.
Well, too bad.
And
we're gonna talk about
I just want to say, if you really do get all your news from us, then that's a problem. So sometimes we're gonna talk about stuff that like isn't the news, and you should probably watch the news or read
news,
a newspaper, because sometimes we're just gonna talk about stuff we want to talk about. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those things that I'm not letting go.
Nope.
And I don't think anyone should, and I think a lot of people are. So we talked last week, I think, about how, you know, a lot of these allegations have been lodged against people that we already hate. but that certainly it was going to come to a point where it's going to be lodged against people that we love. And we need to be as fierce and as protective of the victims of those things and as adversarial against those perpetrators as we were against people that we already hated. And that happened this week with Kevin Spacey, who's an actor that I, you know, I'm an avid watcher of House of Cards, and I've loved his work in almost everything. I mean, you know, he was, what, Kaiser Sose. But it doesn't matter. Yeah, none of that matters.
I mean, I'm gonna debate that a little bit. I don't really care personally about Kevin Spacey one way or another before this. I didn't care. You know?
I don't think that matters. He's a really good actor.
Well, here's why it matters. Okay. And I'm going to talk about, like, the Fox Newsosphere with the Harvey Weinstein revelations. The Fox Newsosphere and the right-wingosphere, when the Harvey Weinstein thing happened, they rubbed their hands together and said, oh, goody, one of theirs is doing this too.
Mm-hmm.
And forgetting about the rampant hypocrisy of it for a minute, I think it's a really weird miscalculation to assume that, okay, because to them, the nexus of liberal politics and politicians and, like, Hollywood entertainment people is all the same.
Yeah.
And so they tried to create, or in their mind, there was this false equivalency between Harvey Weinstein because he's donated to Democrats and somebody like Roger Ailes, who ran the biggest conservative news empire of all time and was such a driving force in conservative politics, or Bill O'Reilly, who is the highest paid conservative commentator of all time, or the actual Republican president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this guy donated to Democrats. So, like, again, I don't, there's nobody in our, there's no rank and file liberals who wanted to jump to the defense of Harvey Weinstein because he's, quote, one of us.
No, there is no one of us if you assault women men or children or anyone.
Sure, but that's even going a step beyond it. Like, so this guy's a fucking Hollywood producer who happens to donate to Democrats, so what?
Yeah.
And Kevin Spacey's an actor who probably, I don't know his politics, but I'm guessing he espoused maybe some liberal views at some point or donated or whatever. I don't care. He's not one of our people. He's a good actor.
Right. I guess all I'm trying to say is there's been a little bit of pain on the side of some of the people that I know that are like, oh, it breaks my heart about Kevin Spacey because
I don't get that.
Well,
I mean, if you really, really like him as an actor and now you feel like you can't watch his work without feeling weird about it, I guess I get that.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Like, he's a really great actor. He is. Like, just objectively, he's a really great actor.
Okay.
And there's some heartbreak about that. And I'm with you that I don't feel a lot of heartbreak because I feel like, it's not like someone that I admire in this, like, you know, grand scope. I get what you're saying, but there's been a little bit of heartbreak on the
other side. I get it. I guess for me, if it came out that one of, like, the cast members of Mystery Science Theater 3000 was doing this, then that would be very, very tough for me to swallow going forward.
Right.
Because I still love
but
that show and watch it all the time.
Absolutely would condemn them in the harshest of terms because it doesn't matter.
No, of course.
So, in case you've been living under a rock, I do want to talk just a little bit about how this transpired, because I think it's important to break down how gross he actually was. When he was accused of this by the actor Anthony Rapp, I think was his name, of, like, cornering him in a room and pushing him down on a
bed.
When he was 14 years old. Kevin Spacey came out and he admitted it, and then he came out.
Yeah, which was so bizarre. So bizarre.
It's not just bizarre. It's fucking bullshit, toxic. No. No. You do.
Yeah.
Let me just tell you, the immeasurable efforts of the LGBT community for the last 30 or 40 years to distance ourselves from the idea that being gay also makes you a pedophile.
Right, which is espoused by the right wing till this day.
Constantly, to this day.
Yeah.
You don't get to be like, I'm a gross garbage person, but don't worry, it's just because I was in the closet and I got drunk.
Oh.
Fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, and we're taking your gay card to Dan Savage's point. Dan Savage was like, yeah, you don't get to be gay. like you are or whatever, but like you don't get to be one of us.
No, you're not.
You don't get to come out. You don't get to blame being gay on for the reason that you molested a 14-year-old.
I tried to.
That's not a thing. Yeah. We do not allow that. It is not okay. It is offensive deeply and personally to everyone that I know in my community, and it is. It makes it so much worse. Had he just done the like,
I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Right. The what's Mark Halperin thing? I'm sorry. I was awful and I'm a piece of shit.
I've been to counseling.
Okay, but then it gets worse, right?
So he's like,
so Kevin Spacey comes out and he says, "God, I basically don't remember this. I was drunk and I'm gay.
Guess what? I'm gay.
I'm gay."
Like that was his biggest concern, right? Like when this broke, he's like, "Oh shit, I guess I'm outed now."
Well, that's what the headlines were literally like, Kevin Spacey comes out. Had to do so over allegations of molesting or attempting to assault a 14-year-old boy.
Yeah, I remember that.
And you're like, no, stop.
Yeah.
Stop.
It's ridiculous.
Stop. Kevin Spacey is a sexual assaulter who decided to use being gay as a cloak for that being okay and also drunkenness. Yeah. So this hit came out and everyone was like, oh, well, you know, that, you know. And then more things came out this week.
Yep. Do you want to get into that?
I would like you to explain, please.
Okay, so it turns out on the set of House of Cards, he's been a gross, awful, pervy sexual harasser and possibly an assaulter to a bunch of young men who are on the production team for House of Cards, especially very young, very impressionable young people in the industry just working on their first job, terrified of saying, because not only is Kevin Spacey the star of House of Cards,
he's Kevin Spacey.
Well, he's one of the executive producers.
But he's also Kevin fucking Spacey.
But he's also the executive producer, babe.
Right.
So what I'm saying is, like, if Harvey Weinstein was, what's one of Weinstein's biggest movies? I've like put him out of my head now.
Pulp Fiction, for example.
Imagine that you were. He's like, Harvey Weinstein and John Travolta rolled into one on the set, basically.
Right. Or Bruce Willis, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, what's the...
A gaffer?
Gaffer.
Yeah, a 20-something gaffer just trying to get into the industry.
And Kevin Spacey, who's the executive producer of this show, and Kevin Spacey comes to you and tries to or does assault you.
But he's putting his hand down people's pants and grabbing their junk without their consent. That's assault.
That's correct.
So Netflix is like, we're shutting it all down. They were in the middle or towards the end of wrapping, shooting, and production of the last season.
Yeah.
And they're just like, we're just shutting this all down.
So my question is this, because a lot of hay was made about that. Oh, House of Cards got canceled. And you and I were like, well, this next season was always supposed to be the last season, so it didn't really get canceled. Are they still going to air it is the question.
Right, and right now I think that's up in the air, because the last I heard was like, no, they're still putting the finishing touches on shooting and producing the last season,
and they've
shut it all down.
Good.
And they don't know what they're going to do, and
I think they should just shut it the fuck down. No, don't air it. I don't give a shit how much it costs you. Do not. No. It's done. That's over.
I think they may have no choice but to do that. But then again, there's financial concerns. Netflix is already way in the red.
I don't care about that.
No, I don't care either. But I'm saying when their board of directors sits down, they may say, like, we've got to air this thing, man.
Yeah, it's going to be bad PR. You know what the backlash is going to be? I would think maybe they should hire me as a consultant, and I will tell them exactly how bad that's going to go for them.
They need a really good PR person right now.
But
there's no doubt about
what
that.
What I want to say is... the point that I was trying to get to with all of this is the frustration that I have with, he said this thing, like this person came out and said this happened. He made this awful, horrible excuse and everyone went, well, maybe it could be true, you know? And then, cause everyone loves Kevin Spacey. And then all these people came forward and said, no, this happened to me too. This happened to me too. And everyone is shocked. And what I would like to say to you, dear audience, is No. If anyone believed that Kevin Spacey one time, got drunk and accidentally assaulted a 14-year-old boy because he was closeted, and it only happened one time and it was just because he was drunk and he feels really bad, then you are complicit in rape culture.
Yeah.
Because of course It didn't just happen one time. It has nothing to do with him being gay or him being drunk one time or anything else.
No, it speaks to your character.
People who do this more than once. And if you don't understand that by now, get your fucking head right. Like, this is not a thing that just... You don't... Travis, have you ever gotten drunk and decided... Not decided, but just accidentally sexually assaulted someone and then thought, that was awful, and I'll never do it again?
Well, let's go to the context, right? I have never in my life hosted an adult party and invited over a teenager unaccompanied without parents. That is bizarre. I know. It's, I guess it's acting and it's New York and maybe it was a different scene or thing that was going on there. But yeah, I've never even done that to begin with, let alone wait till everybody leaves and then try to force myself on the teenager. Like, I don't even know where to begin.
Right.
To try to wrap my head around it. When you
listen to his statement and you believe him, what you're saying is, I believe these kind of things can happen. I believe that men can just have a slip up, or like, it's believing that men really are constantly trying to hold back this urge to hurt people.
The Mike Pence theory.
Yes. And that one time he slipped up, that doesn't mean that he does this all the time. That's not true. And if you look at yourselves, male listeners and female listeners, and all of you, if you look at yourselves and the men in your life, if you're a person who is constantly trying to hold back assaulting people, this maybe makes sense. If you're not one of those people, then really examine it critically and think, in order for this to be a thing that you only do when you're drunk, it has to be a thing that you've been wanting to do that you just didn't have, you know, liquid courage to do, right? If that's what we're saying.
I would agree with that, yes.
Because it's not like, it's not like every drunk person's like, finally I can rape someone. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's not most people's default.
Okay, but I will, one tiny caveat to that.
All right.
Is that I have seen some people, and you have too, when they are affected by alcohol, their personality can completely change.
Yes.
But not to the point where they become rapists or murderers
No, absolutely not. And so it was of no surprise to me at all that multiple people came forward. I mean, it was like I was just waiting for them to do so.
Yeah.
The shock that I saw was like, wait, stop. Why is this shocking?
And it always
starts... You really seriously believed he did this one time because he was drunk and closeted? That's seriously, you believed that? If you believe that, then you don't understand rape culture. You don't understand that these people do this over and over and over.
And more to that point, it's always someone needs to first blow the lid off.
Yes.
And then the other people come forward.
Yes.
It's always that first brave person. Nobody wants to be the first one.
Well, who wants to be? Yes, correct. Yeah. And prior to this whole Harvey Weinstein thing, it was really dangerous to be the first one.
Oh, yeah.
Because as we've heard from the Harvey Weinstein cases, a lot of these women did do things and their careers were stymied. Mm-hmm. Their lives were ruined. They were
called
given
liars,
settlements, but they really they were given gag orders. Like, it is really...
And if they have, a husband or a family or a wife or whoever, now you got to turn around and explain all this to them.
Yeah.
And now they're going to have reporters in the yard, and it's a nightmare.
It is. Yeah. So, no, nobody wants to be the first one. But I do think that this has been a little bit of a sea change, that we are finally saying, okay, this is happening all over.
Well, it's not only reduced to the United States. I just saw yesterday or a couple days ago where... guess what? It's been brought up that in the British Parliament, this has been an epidemic of harassment. And
yeah, no, I didn't think this was... This is not a U.S. problem. This is a problem when men have... Well, it's the patriarchy, right?
Yeah, it's the patriarchy.
Men have a lot of power and...
But to that point, there was a British talk show thing where they have comedians on and they have this panel. And this one asshole guy was like, okay, yeah, this might happen, but we're not really talking about high crimes here. And the lady on the panel, longtime British comedian lady who's very respected, was like, okay, it may not technically be high crimes, but the devastating effects it has on the victims of it really might as well be. And she got a lot of veneration for that comment.
That's
and
lovely.
The guy looked like a total asshole.
Good.
So
she's right.
Of course she is. And the attempt by this asshole to minimize it makes me think, what have you been doing?
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry. I don't want to put on my witch hunt hat, but why the no, fuck
No, I'm
you
a
say
witch
that?
And I'm hunting you to Lindy West Point. I'm a witch and I'm fucking hunting you. Like, this is everywhere. And it's going to be more and more. And I'm glad.
You know what
I'm
I was,
glad that we blow the goddamn lid off this already.
And you know what I was thinking about today? And I'm probably going to write a column about it.
Yeah.
Is that I was starting to think back to my college days when I, you know, I was a barista and I was slinging sub sandwiches. Mm-hmm. And I was just thinking about how some of the girls and women who worked in those environments that were male dominated were treated.
Yeah.
So if you think this is just like a white collar entertainment business politics thing,
no.
This happens to baristas and women who work in fast food and women who work as teachers and anywhere and everywhere.
That's correct.
And what recourse do they have? I mean, so they're supposed to by the law, but we know how well that often works.
No, it doesn't. And you're exactly right. And those women and those baristas and fast food workers and teachers and secretaries don't get the privilege of being pretty famous and white and saying, oh, this happened to me.
Right.
Nobody cares. And, you know, 15 of them can all come together in the break room and say, this happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And who listens? Who cares? Yeah. But hopefully, my hope is that having it be so public will
start to shift the culture,
not just in Hollywood, which is a very, you know, tiny sliver of the population, but that it sort of spreads out and that HR departments and that people...
well, these things come in waves, right?
They do.
Like the 90s is when the sexual harassment thing sort of took off. Then there was a backlash.
Well, so it was invented, right?
Yes.
It was. What I mean by that is not to minimize it. It literally didn't exist.
No, the term didn't exist.
Catherine MacKinnon, who is a feminist philosopher and lawyer, with whom I disagree a great deal on a great number of things, including like she believes that like women can't, no one can really have consensual sex.
Right, all sex
against women is rape.
Right.
Patriarchy, which I just fundamentally disagree with, and she's also like really anti-porn and anti-sex, but that's beyond the point. Catherine MacKinnon, outside of her work as a political theorist, created the category for sexual harassment. She codified it into law through litigation and through careful study, and she created this idea that if a person of authority is trading that authority for sex and trading you know, sex for jobs and sex for advancement and all of that should be against the law.
Mm-hmm.
And I admire her greatly for that. And that's like within a little bit before my lifetime that actually was codified into law. Prior to that, there was no such thing. It was either rape, which is a strange man in an alley.
Right.
And not even your husband can just have sex with you whenever he wants. And if you say no, it doesn't matter because you marry him.
One of Trump's main lawyers even believes that. We know that.
I mean, this is all like, this is recent stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like in France, it wasn't until like 1984 that they decided that if you were wearing jeans, you could be raped.
Yeah.
Because jeans are too hard to take off.
Right.
So you couldn't possibly be raped because you were wearing jeans. Spousal rape in the United States was in the 80s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That was a thing that actually... The 1980s. Within my lifetime.
And it wasn't a slam dunk either. That was a very difficult, contentious case.
Rape of sex workers.
Mm-hmm.
Not a thing.
Nope.
Till recently. And even that's really hard
that,
to prove.
Yeah, good luck prosecuting that. That is really
tough.
It's
still... it's illegal now. It did not used to be. Mm-hmm. It did not used to be. How can you rape a hooker, right? How can you rape a prostitute?
Right.
Well, they said no. Now you can rape literally anyone.
Yeah, consent, even if it's for money, is consent.
Correct.
If there's consent.
Correct.
And lack of consent is lack of consent.
Or, you know, you beat them up and you're like, well, I paid you. And you're like, no, it's all still illegal.
Yeah.
This is within my lifetime. Since I've been born, these things have become illegal. So we're not talking about over the last 100 years. This is all very recent. And this is one more step in that direction of, you know, we codified it into law that sexual harassment in the workplace is illegal. And now we're starting to hopefully see that actually be enforced. Because so often laws pass and they just aren't enforced broadly, right?
Yeah.
So even though it's illegal to rape a sex worker, it's still we're still not to the point where it's unacceptable to do so.
Right.
Right. Yeah. In the same way that it's illegal to sexually harass your employees, it's still not totally unacceptable to do so. So we're still fighting that battle.
And we will be.
Yes.
We will be. So we got about 10 minutes left. Did we talk about Dustin Hoffman last week?
No.
Well, it's come out that he was gross and pervy on the set of, I don't remember, I mean, Tootsie, and then a movie before Tootsie as well.
Yeah.
And this is all from the 80s. And I don't, he came out with some kind of half-assed apology statement. But this is another one, a beloved actor.
Yes. Well, I had an interesting reaction to that one.
Well, me too, and with Kevin Spacey, because this is going to sound very self-serving when I say this. There are certain actors, even if I like their work, have always personally sort of bugged me. There's just something about them. Mm-hmm. There's like a smugness or a something that's just rubbed me the wrong way. Kevin Spacey has always been one of those people. And Dustin Hoffman has always been one of those people. And there's a litany of others. I'm not like singling them out after the fact.
Right. And being and like, well, I never liked him anyway.
No,
I knew
no,
he was
no,
a
no.
rapist.
No, I love their work. Right. I mean, I'm not going to, some of their right. work. Like Kevin Spacey's made a lot of shit movies, but.
Yeah, but he's made a lot of fucking phenomenal movies too.
Yes, yes. Granted.
And I love so House has Cards. Dustin Hoffman.
And so has Dustin Hoffman.
Now, what I will tell you, I had a weird reaction to the Dustin Hoffman one because I heard this interview with him, and I think it was Terry Gross on Fresh Air, and he was talking about how during the filming of Tootsie, he had this revelation. Because if you haven't seen Tootsie, you should watch it. It's great. But he... Mm. Maybe not now. I don't know.
I think it's a little dated, but...
It is, actually. You're right. It's actually kind of awful in retrospect.
It's supposed to be a very feminist movie.
But it isn't.
But it isn't. It plays on
really
all kinds of awful tropes.
And gender
and
norms.
Stereotypes
and you're right. It's actually awful.
Yeah,
never mind.
Yeah.
It's awful. It's but it was made in the 70s when that was
early
not...
Early 80s.
Okay, early 80s. Yeah. Anyway, so I remember listening to this interview that he did, and he was talking about how he... Because in the movie, he... dresses as a woman.
He's a struggling actor
yes.
who can't get a gig, but there's this one gig where they need a woman, so
yes.
he dresses up as a woman
and
gets,
and he
the,
gets
gig
the job
on a soap opera.
Right, which is so fucking like just that gross reverse sexism thing.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
you're right, the movie's garbage. It's
yeah,
awful.
Yeah.
Anyway, he's doing this interview and he's talking about how the first time he saw himself dressed as a woman, and this isn't drag, right? He's not like a gorgeous queen. He's just supposed to be
like a Mrs. Doubtfire type.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Mrs. Doubtfire
with no mask.
Was the, yeah.
With no mask.
Yeah.
So they just dress him as a woman and give him makeup and a wig and a girdle and all the things.
And
he,
it's so funny, he can't walk in heels and all these men have crushes on her and isn't that funny? And
right. But
it's a dumb movie.
It is. But,
it really
the
is.
The point of my story is he was doing this interview about the first time he saw himself dressed as a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And he
didn't make
found
for an
himself
woman.
To be an ugly woman.
Yeah.
And that had a profound effect on him because he thought, oh my God, like, I can't imagine if I was an ugly woman because of how people treat ugly women, which
yeah.
to me, when this interview was like 10 years ago, and I remember listening to it and thinking, oh, so you're an asshole.
Yeah. Like,
so he literally said he cried when he saw himself because how people would have treated him had he been born this way.
And he thinks.
And I was like, so you're one of those people that treat women that you don't find attractive like shit.
Right.
You would not have that reaction if you treated all women with respect, but you're one of those people that treat women that you don't find attractive like shit, which is why you had that reaction.
And he thought he was making a feminist argument.
He did. And a lot of white feminists from the second wave were like, oh my God, isn't that amazing that he realized? And I'm like, no, what he's revealing is that he's an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
That's all he, right? Am I crazy or am I right?
Like, no, I completely agree with what you're saying.
If you saw yourself dressed as a woman and you were ugly, would you cry because you were like, how awful it must be to be an ugly woman? Or would you be like, huh? Like, to have that visceral of an emotional reaction means that you treat women like shit.
Well, it could be that he's just made it up and he just came up with a line that would sound good on NPR too. Let's
no, he gets pretty emotionally about it. I mean, maybe that's
he's an actor.
All right. I don't know. Either way, the story doesn't work for me.
He's a good actor.
The story doesn't fucking work for me.
No.
It doesn't work for me.
No.
If you have that visceral reaction, that means that you treat women like shit. And if it's not just women that you don't find attractive that you treat like shit, likely the women that you do find attractive, you treat even worse. You just think it's treating
them
better.
Well, now we know that's true.
Well, now we know that's true.
Yeah, so I'm sure that's the tip of the iceberg for old Dustin.
Yes, yes.
And even the jokes were horrible.
I know, that movie is garbage.
No, right? I mean in what he's being alleged with. Like, he made these horrible sexist jokes, and they're even worse than George H.W. Bush's David Copperfield jokes.
God, I didn't...
Go read it if you want to. I'm not going to repeat them. They're that bad.
Okay.
Anyway.
So...
Here we are as far as that goes.
Keep coming forward, and I know it sucks if you're somebody like me who has gone through this, and nobody... Like, what am I going to do? No, the press doesn't give a shit, right? Nobody cares. But I do hope that it gives, I know that it gives me some solace to know that people are starting to think that this stuff is wrong and care.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's having, you know, ripples through power, which is always good and important and will eventually hopefully affect people that aren't in power or aren't famous. If this has happened to you, I am sorry, and it has happened to me, and it sucked. It was awful. And just because you're not on the news doesn't mean that you don't matter and that your story doesn't matter. And
With our last few minutes, do you want to talk about the climate change thing that was released, or do you want to talk about your experience at the grocery store a few hours ago?
I'll just quickly talk about that, and then you can talk about climate change. I didn't get to actually read the report.
Yeah, we're not going to have time for both. So, but you go ahead and relate your story, and we'll change that save the other thing for next week.
Yeah, I went to the store because I didn't have this medication that I need, and I was just out. So I went to a gas station. They didn't have it. I went to the King Supers, which is Kroger if you're not in Colorado, and it's sort of a big parking lot, and it was a Saturday, so it was kind of crazy. Middle of downtown Denver. And this guy was driving a car, and this person on a bicycle sort of cut right in front of him, and the car had to sort of swerve and didn't hit him, and like it was narrow miss, right? And the person driving the car was an older black gentleman, and the person driving the bike was a younger white kid, probably in his early 20s. And they got into an altercation in front of me. The black guy parked his car and got out, and the biker was like, picking a fight, like he was ready for a fight, and he said, "You're in the wrong hood, man. You're in the wrong hood." And the black guy was like, "Sorry, like glad I didn't hit you. Are you okay? And sorry about that," which totally was not his fault. The biker was absolutely in the wrong, and he was like, "Nah, man, you're in the wrong fucking hood. We don't allow niggers around here." Sorry to use that word, but that's what he said in front of me, in front of my face, in the middle of downtown Denver. And I just looked, I was standing like right there. So I just said, "No, don't do that. Don't do that." And he just looked at me and he's like, "You want to have a thing?" And the black guy looked at me and he just gave me this like look of like, "Don't get involved. Like, thanks or whatever, but just like, don't just you, what, and what the fuck am I going to do? I want to go punch the guy in the face and smash his head into the ground and all the things."
And we just had this conversation the other night about to try to avoid these people in these situations. Of course, that's much to do with sexual harassment.
Yeah.
But in this case, you know, I totally understand.
Get to say that in front of me.
I wouldn't have been able to keep my mouth shut either.
No, you don't get to say that in front of me. And I, you know, I'm a small white woman, so I don't have a lot to going for me in terms of going to fucking confront this guy, but I can't just say nothing,
But see, the whole point of this is this has now become... We are now in an environment where it's safe cover.
He felt completely emboldened to do that.
He has safe space to do that.
And this is like 11 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday. This isn't a drunk guy at a bar. This is a guy riding a bicycle to the grocery store confronted with another person driving a car.
In downtown Denver.
In downtown Denver.
We're not in Birmingham.
Right. And it brought up a lot for me. All I could do is just be like, "Don't do that. Don't do that."
I think the big takeaway is this is a stark reminder that this is what we're up against, and we absolutely have to unite because the stakes are just way too high for petty infighting and bullshit. This is what we're up against.
Yeah, does it matter if Hillary Clinton raised money and then therefore had some influence on our party Or does it matter that that guy gets to say the N-word to some guy in downtown Denver in front of me
in the year 2017
of the day and not feel any shame about it? And I don't know. I think there are bigger things to think about than, to your point, than the infighting and the bullshit. Because it's real now.
Well, we're out of time. I'll leave you on that cheery note. We will cover the climate change big thing that came out. I'm sure there'll be a million more revelations to talk about and all kinds of things next week. So stay active, stay tuned, stay involved. Reverent Duo on Twitter, reverenttestimony@gmail.com. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
Have a great week. Bye.